damn straight they did. The stairwell shaft ended in an underground chamber made of concrete. It was perfectly circular, like a hub, maybe 20 feet in diameter, the size of a living room, but round, like a living room in a movie about the future. It had 8 open doorways leading off to 8 horizontal corridors, one at each point of the compass, like bicycle spokes. The corridors were dark, deep in shadow. The doorways were straight and square and true. The chamber's floor was hard and flat and dry and smooth. The walls were hard and flat and dry and smooth. The ceiling was hard and flat and dry and smooth. Altogether, the whole place was a neat, crisp, exact piece of construction. Well designed, well engineered, well built, ideal for its intended purpose, which was an orphanage for children. What made it useless for anything else was that the ceiling was only 5 feet 6 inches above the floor. That was all. Bad terrain. The round chamber and the accompanying spoked corridors had been burrowed laterally into a thin and ungenerous seam between upper and lower plates of unyielding hard rock. The low ceiling was a necessary concession to reality, and a professional disappointment, probably, but theoretically adequate for a pack of unaccompanied kids, all runty and starving. Reacher could picture the engineers confronting the unexpected problem, poring over geological surveys, looking up tables of average height versus age, shrugging their shoulders, revising their plans, signing off on the inevitable. Technically acceptable, they would have said, which was the only standard military engineers understood. But the place was not acceptable for anything else, technically or otherwise, not even close. Not acceptable for marine training or any other kind of military purpose. Not acceptable for any kind of full-grown adult. Peterson had advanced maybe 10 feet into the space, and he was buckled at the knees, and his head was ducked way down. He was crouching. His shoulders were on the ceiling. He was waddling painfully, ludicrously stooped, like a Russian folk dancer. And Peterson was 3 inches shorter than Reacher. Reacher stood up again. He was on the bottom step, 9 inches above the round chamber's floor. Its ceiling was level with his waist. His whole upper body was still inside the shaft. Not good. Holland came on down and crowded in behind him, said, "We won't hear the siren way down here. Does your cell phone work?" "Not a chance." "Then we better be quick." "After you," Holland said. "Mind your head." Reacher had a choice. He could shuffle along on his knees or scoot along on his butt. He chose to scoot on his butt. Slow and undignified, but less painful. He snaked downward off the last stair like a clumsy gymnast and sat down and scuttled the cautious yard, heels and knuckles and ass, like a kid playing at being a crab. Ahead of him, the 2 ventilation shafts came down through the low ceiling and ended a stubby foot below the concrete. 3 separate parallel bores, 1 wide for the stairs, 2 narrow for the pipes, all ending the prescribed distance below the surface in a ludicrous horizontal slot burrowed laterally and grudgingly into the rock. Reacher said, "I was already taller than this when I was 7. His voice came back to him with a strange humming echo. The acoustics were weird. The concrete he was sitting on was neither warm nor cold. There was a faint smell of kerosene in the air, and a draft. Air was coming down the stairwell shaft and circulating back up through the ventilation shafts, a Venturi effect. The stone building's door was open more than 200 feet above them, and the wind was blowing hard across it and sucking air out of the bunker. the same way a spray gun sucks paint out of a reservoir or a carburetor sucks gas out of a fuel line. But nature abhors a vacuum, so some circulatory layer was feeding air right back in just as fast. "Move," Holland said. Reacher scuttled another yard. Holland ducked down and stepped off the last stair and came after him, crouching like Peterson, spinning slowly, playing his flashlight beam around the whole wide circle. "Eight doorways," he said. "Eight choices. Which one has the lab?" The same strange humming echo, like Holland's voice, was everywhere and nowhere. Reacher said, "There is no lab."
"Has to be. Where there's meth, there's a lab."
"There was a lab," Reacher said, "once upon a time, but it wasn't here. It was a big place in New Jersey, or California, or somewhere. It had a sign outside."
"What are you talking about?"
Reacher played his flashlight beam low across the floor, started at the bottom step, and followed a faint track of dirt and scuffs that curled counterclockwise across the concrete to a doorway more or less opposite where he was sitting. South, if he was north, or north if he was south. He had been turned around so many times by the staircase, he had lost his bearings.
"Follow me," he said.
He scooted off. He found it faster to turn around and travel backward, push with his feet, pivot on his hands, dump down on his ass, and repeat, and repeat, and repeat. It was warm work. He pulled off his hat and his gloves and unzipped his coat. Then he resumed. Holland and Peterson followed him all the way, bent over, crouching, waddling, always in his view. He could hear knee joints popping and cracking, ligaments and fluid. Holland's, he guessed. Peterson was younger and in better shape. He made it to the doorway and swiveled around and shone his flashlight down the length of the corridor. It was a tunnel maybe 100 feet long, perfectly horizontal, like a coal seam. It was 5 feet 6 inches high and about the same in width. The left-hand half was an unobstructed 100-foot walkway. The right-hand half was built up into a long, low, continuous concrete shelf, 100 feet long, about 2 feet off the floor. A sleeping shelf, he guessed. He imagined bedrolls laid head to toe all along its length, maybe 20 of them. 20 sleeping children, 5 feet each.